Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. U.S. President Barack Obama has selected Federal's Appeals Court Judge Merrick Garland as his nominee to fill the Supreme Court vacancy created by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia last month. He made the announcement at the White House Rose Garden.
Someone who brings to his work a spirit of decency, modesty, integrity, even-handedness, and excellence. These qualities and his long commitment to public service have earned him the respect and admiration of leaders from both sides of the aisle. He will ultimately bring that same character to bear on the Supreme Court, an institution in which he is uniquely prepared to serve immediately. Today, I am nominating Chief Judge Merrick Brian Garland to join the Supreme Court.
Garland is currently the chief judge of the U.S. District Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. You can read more on the president's comments at voanews.com. The gunman shot dead Tuesday in Brussels is linked to a raid that investigators into the Paris attacks with Mohamed Belkaid.
La personne abattue a été identifiée dans le courant de la soirée.
Federal prosecutors in Belgium said the 35-year-old Algerian was living illegally in the country and also said they're holding two men and still assessing whether they were connected to the shooting. A police sniper shot dead the Algerian who had an assault rifle after four officers were wounded Tuesday during what investigators had expected to be a routine search of an apartment in the south of the Belgian capital. This is VOA News. Canadian passenger railway Via Rail confirmed Wednesday that it's beefing up security after having received a threat to train stations. Specific aspects of the threat were not released. Via Rail spokeswoman told AFP that it appeared to be unfounded. Still, she said the rail has advised employees, reminding them to be vigilant. And as a precaution, the railway has also stepped up police and canine patrols in certain situations and in certain stations and continues to closely work with law enforcement agencies. Russia's defense ministry said more of its planes left Syria Wednesday, continuing its withdrawal as the UN held more indirect peace talks with Syria's warring side. The Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, held a press conference today. In his comments, he says Turkey's shelling of Syria is undermining the start of the political process. The foreign minister's comments come as U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry plans to travel to Moscow next week for talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin about the drawdown and the new push for peace in the country. Kerry said he would also speak with not only Putin, but also Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov about how to move forward with the process of bringing a political solution to the five-year conflict. A bomb ripped through a packed bus in northwestern Pakistan on Wednesday, killing at least 15 people and wounding at least 30 others. The victims were mostly government employees, according to Peshawar provincial officials. The initial police investigation concludes that the explosive material was hidden under a seat in the bus and a time device was used to detonate it. Television footage showed the powerful blast completely destroyed it. No one has claimed responsibility for the bombing. At least one suicide bomber has detonated at a mosque on the outskirts of Maiduguri, Nigeria, killing at least 22 people and wounding 17 others. Reports say Wednesday's blast happened early in the morning, and so far there's been no responsibility for that blast. Global soccer body FIFA has applied to U.S. authorities for tens of millions of dollars in damages from ex-officials indicted there for graft and recognized for the first time that executives had in the past sold votes in World Cup hosting contests. Gianni Infantino was recently elected president to clear out the worst corruption scandal in FIFA history. He said that money had been meant for playing fields and kit and not officials' mansions and cars. He said he would get it back no matter how long it takes. Pope Francis appealed to nations Wednesday to open their hearts and their doors to migrants. In comments to those thousands gathered in St. Peter's Square, he said that migrants waiting at the borders in the cold and rain were made to feel like exiles abandoned by God. I'm Frances Alonso.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. And coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
the government says the 19 victims came from 6 different countries. 11 were Ivorian, 4 French citizens were killed, as well as 1 German, 1 Nigerian, 1 Macedonian and 1 Lebanese.
That's Emily Ayoub reporting from the city of Grand Bassam in Ivory Coast. Details coming up.
Also, 2 suicide bombers have killed at least 22 people and wounded another 17 at a mosque on the outskirts of Maiduguri, Nigeria. And Britain reportedly is considering sending 1,000 troops to Libya as part of an international force.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Two suicide bombers have killed at least 22 people and wounded another 17 at a mosque on the outskirts of Maiduguri, Nigeria. Witnesses say the bombers were women disguised in men's clothing. One was reported to have entered the mosque early today in the Umarari area and triggered her bomb, while the other waited outside and detonated her explosive as people rushed out of the building. Maiduguri is seen as the birthplace of the Boko Haram militants and has become a focus in the government's battle to eliminate the aggressive Islamist group, which has staged attacks in northern Nigeria and neighboring countries around Lake Chad, Niger, Chad, and Cameroon. No one has claimed responsibility for today's blast.
The Ivory Coast government says the death toll from Sunday's terrorist attack has risen to 19, excluding the 3 terrorists. Victims were of 6 different nationalities. Today, the Council of Ministers was symbolically held in the city of Grand Bassam, where the attacks happened. Emily Ayoub reports from Grand Bassam.
Government spokesman Bruno Kone says the violence spared no group.
On note des Ivoiriens du Sud, des Ivoiriens du Nord, des Africains de la sous-région, des Occidentaux.
He says that among the victims were Ivorian from the North and the South, Africans and Westerners, Muslim and Christians. He says that it is what makes the violence all the more unacceptable. Kone announced the government will provide nearly $1 million in financial assistance to the town of Grand Bassam, local hotel and traders. Earlier Wednesday, President Alassane Ouattara, dressed in black, placed a wreath on the beach next to the hotel where the shooting took place. The president says Ivory Coast will not respond to this attack with exclusion.
Cet événement ne fait que renforcer l'union entre les filles et les fils.
He says this event only reinforces the unity of the brothers and sisters of this country and that Ivory Coast will continue to be the land of hospitality that it has always been. Heavily armed gunmen descended on the beachfront resort in Grand Bassam at midday Sunday and opened fire on beachgoers and people into a hotel. The government said all 3 attackers were killed. 3 days after the attack, almost no traces of the carnage remain, and maintenance men were busy cleaning, pulling through and moving on all the priorities of the hotel owners. The president of the board of the Étoile du Sud Hotel says the attack was demoralizing at first, but now my colleagues and I are ready to get going again. The hotel executive said the tourism industry must bounce back quickly. Standing next to him, Patrick Connet, owner of the neighboring hotel Nouvelle Payotte, agreed. His establishment was looted after the attack. If you come by on Friday, Connet said, you will see everything will be ready. Asked if he took special measures to ensure the safety of his customer, Connet said the Ivorian government has pledged its help. We have a day guard and a night guard, the hotel owner said, and the government is doing what is necessary. Ivory Coast will hold a tribute Sunday for all the victims. 24 people injured in the attack remain hospitalized. Emily Yaw from VOA News in Grand Bassam, Ivory Coast.
Britain reportedly is considering sending 1,000 troops to Libya as part of an international force. The French news agency says news of the possible deployment was revealed in a letter to Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond from the House of Commons Foreign Affairs Committee. The letter says the committee is aware of plans to send the troops as part of an international contingent of 6,000. The Islamic State militant group has expanded its operations in Libya and now threatens neighboring countries. The international force reportedly would train the army of the UN-backed unity government in Libya and help protect government officials.
The There is an effort underway in North Africa to counter extremism groups. Youssef Makaria, president of the Association of Imams of the Sahel, says a number of Algerian imams will train imams from Sahel countries to address religious and violent extremism. Anwar Adam is a former Algerian parliamentarian and the president of the Algerian Movement for Freedom and Social Justice. Senior Middle East reporter Mohamed El-Shenawi asked him about the imams who would help counter violent extremism in the Sahel.
We are all from the Maliki school, and therefore we have what is called the Wasati Islam, the Islam that is moderate between quote and quote. But the problem of terrorism and violence in North Africa and sub-Saharan Africa is deeper than that. It needs more than just some imams, but this is not really enough.
Were the Algerian imams successful in raising awareness inside Algeria on violent extremism?
Well, the situation in Algeria in the 90s is different, security-wise, is different from the current situation in sub-Saharan Africa. However, the imams in general and everybody, they were not having any room for really helping in easing the tension. And Algeria might be a bad example for that. If we are talking about these imams that did not have that experience, actually, because of the lack of freedom of expression, etc., in the 90s and until now, actually.
But using scholars in Islam to counter violent extremism, which has nothing to do with Islam, is a way that some countries are adopting now. What do you think of that?
We are really facing serious terrorism right now, mm-hmm. that need really an explanation, that need really to address the ideological understanding or the understanding of the texts of the book, the sacred book of Islam. Of course, we need some scholastic effort. It's very much needed indeed. Of course, I am among those who are calling to review and have new interpretation of the sacred text that will help our youth to understand what Islam is for, because that is what we call in Islam the school of the purpose, that is the purpose behind the text of Islam. Mm-hmm. There is no justification whatsoever for having killing innocent civilian, for engaging in terrorism. This is against the main purpose, to protect the sanctity of life. This approach is needed indeed for our youth who are engaged in such terrorist acts, and they think that is okay in Islam. This is against Islam, actually.
Is it enough to use imams to counter violent extremism in the Sahel region, or there is a need for other deeper measures?
What's going on in sub-Saharan and in the Sahel, it's really a very serious situation. There is an escalation of this violence. There's an escalation of instability, of security matters. And I don't believe that the imams themselves will be enough. And we have actually in our Movement for Liberty and Social Justice, we just published a study calling for a serious cooperation in security matters between Algeria and Morocco. That is the solution. We need to have a serious security cooperation to face this new escalation of violence and terrorism in the Sahel, in North Africa and in the Sahel. We have in Libya, the situation in Libya is very dangerous, in Mali, etc. And only a serious cooperation at this security level between Algeria and Morocco that could face this escalation.
Anwar Hadam is a former Algerian parliamentarian and the president of the Algerian Movement for Freedom and Social Justice. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi.
VOA's Somali service reports today that forces from the northern Puntland region have attacked al-Shabaab militants who moved into the region. Officials and witnesses say there's heavy fighting around Souj, some 90 kilometers east of Isle. Puntland officials say none of their troops have been wounded or killed, but they report a number of casualties among al-Shabaab. The militants reportedly moved into the Puntland region on Monday.
EU leaders are meeting in Brussels today on Europe's migrant and refugee crisis. The Associated Press reports the EU's Migration Commissioner told member states that they are urgently need to deliver on commitments to resettle the refugees. He says the humanitarian situation in Greece is getting worse every day despite newly built relocation centers. About 1 million migrants and refugees have arrived on Greek shores since the beginning of last year. Tomorrow, EU leaders will meet with Turkish officials on the crisis. Also, Germany's parliament has approved toughening the country's rape law following a string of sexual assaults on New Year's Eve in Cologne. AFP reports the change would cover cases in which women withheld their consent to have sex but did not physically fight back. Currently, rape victims must show they physically resisted their attackers. Hundreds of women reported sexual attacks and robberies in Cologne. Many had blamed the attacks on men they described as Arab or North African. In other migrant-related news, Polish and Czech officials say a new migration route to Western Europe could open through Russia, Finland and Ukraine. The Czech Senate chairman says most of the people in his country would not accept larger numbers of migrants and refugees. And on the Greece-Macedonian border, migrants and refugees are setting up new makeshift camps near Idomene. Reports say they're trying to escape overcrowding, flooding, illness and food shortages at the main camp. That camp currently holds about 12,000 people, even though it was meant to hold only 1,500. Migrants have been stranded at the border. They've been told there's no longer any access to the rest of Europe through that crossing.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Amihi Suhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Two suicide bombers have killed at least 22 people and wounded another 17 at a mosque on the outskirts of Maiduguri, Nigeria. The Ivory Coast government says the death toll from Sunday's terrorist attack has risen to 19. And Britain reportedly is considering sending 1,000 troops to Libya as part of an international force. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
As health officials and scientists race to find ways of slowing the spread of the Zika virus, researchers are learning more about the mosquito that carries it. They hope a better understanding will lead to ways to prevent infection. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Cornell University researchers are among those trying to help developing countries prepare for Zika outbreaks. Even though the symptoms are mild for most people infected, Zika is linked to paralytic disorders and birth defects. The main carrier of the virus is the Aedes aegypti mosquito. Professor Laura Harrington says humans provide it with everything it needs to reproduce and survive. The first is water for a breeding ground.
It prefers clean water, often clean drinking water that people store through the rainy season and use in the dry season.
And the chair of Cornell's Department of Entomology says the female Aedes aegypti prefers human blood. In fact, human blood helps it live longer and produce more often. Biting any animal won't do that.
The other really significant thing that we've learned linked to the transmission of diseases is that this mosquito, unlike others, feeds almost every day. So you can imagine a mosquito that picks up any of these viruses, like Zika, is infected for life. And once it's infectious, it can go on to infect other people almost every other day.
Also, the Aedes aegypti does not travel very far. It lives within a 100-meter radius from where it hatched. Despite its limited range, current efforts to control it have not been successful. Harrington says removing water storage containers and trash near homes theoretically should work, but apparently does not. So Cornell researchers are trying a different approach, one that would interfere with the mosquito's reproduction cycle. For example, disrupting the mosquito's mating behavior with sound waves, or developing chemicals that target molecules within the mosquito that are necessary for fertilization or laying eggs. Another approach would be to genetically alter male mosquitoes to carry substances that interfere with successful mating. Harrington's Cornell colleague, development sociology professor Alika Basu, says there's a lot that is not known about the Zika virus's social and economic effects. She says those who are poor, indigenous, or live in rural areas are more likely to be exposed to Zika and less likely to prevent a pregnancy.
We know that there is a risk of transmission through sexual contact. We don't know if, as was the case with HIV/AIDS, there is also a risk to blood transfusions or a risk of transmission through injectable drug use.
Basu says access to contraception or abortion may be major issues, considering the link between Zika and birth defects, such as abnormally small heads. But abortion runs counter to religious beliefs or laws in many countries. Nevertheless, she says, women need to practice safe sex to prevent Zika infection the way they do to prevent HIV infection. Basu says public discourse is the first step toward changing human behavior and culture. She says, however, that efforts to control mosquito breeding areas may have other effects besides limiting Zika's spread. She says it could also lower the incidences of other diseases, such as dengue and chikungunya. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
A recent aerial survey of Zambia's elephant population shows anti-poaching efforts are having a positive impact on the country's national parks. The Zambia Department of National Parks and Wildlife participated in the Great Elephant Survey, which included 20 countries across the continent. It is the first Pan-African elephant census in 40 years. The Great Elephant Census was funded by Paul G. Allen's Vulcan Incorporated and supported by the Nature Conservancy. It was initially launched in 2013 across Africa to collect data and update the status of African elephants. The Zambia Elephant Survey completes the census. It found that elephant numbers are stable in some areas, but further efforts are needed to tackle poaching. Max Brown, Director of Conservation for the Nature Conservancy Africa, explains how the survey was conducted in Zambia.
From a fixed-wing airplane, within a six-week period during the dry season, across four national park complexes in Zambia. And so it's done with two planes, so there's a duplicate survey with people in the airplane counting elephants as they fly across in tight transects across each of the parks.
The aerial survey was conducted over 21 million acres of Zambia that included national parks and game management areas. The areas included Kafue and Sioma in Ngwezi National Parks and the Luanga Valley and Lower Zambezi systems. Brown says the results were excellent in that they showed the elephant population was doing better than they had anticipated.
There were 21,000 elephants that were counted, which is a good result for Zambia. So the carcasses found is within a sustainable range. And so in general, it was a positive survey showing that there's actually a stable elephant population in Zambia or across the whole country.
Brown says counting the elephant carcasses and noting the approximate age of those carcasses shows the deaths were within sustainable levels. It means Zambia's elephant population is stable, even increasing, corroborating the live elephant counts. However, Brown says there is concern about what's happening in one of the areas surveyed.
One of them, the elephants have been hit very hard. It's right on the Angola border. And so there's been a lot of poaching in that area. And then another system is actually doing better than expected. And yes, that's a result of good anti-poaching work in the Kafue National Park. And there's a group called Game Rangers International that works closely with the Zambian government. And they've been very successful at increasing the anti-poaching efforts, hiring village game scouts, and doing a good job of protection and controlling in that part. But it's not uniform across the country at this point.
Brown says protection initiatives may need to be intensified in areas where the elephant population is facing more significant threats.
There needs to be a continual stream of funding still. A lot of these areas are funded through tourism revenues, and we need more revenue. It therefore means that we need to continue these anti-poaching efforts in the near term while the price of ivory is still high and while the demand is high. In the long term, a key issue for elephants is habitat, so we need to continue to work on all the conservation effort and on the community conservation outside of the park to make sure that these elephants have viable habitat for the future.
Brown says the Zambian government has indicated that it will launch a working group to determine not only how to protect the current population of elephants, but how to build on successful initiatives to see the elephant population grow. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
If you want to find very happy people, go to Denmark. A new report says lists Denmark as the world's happiest country, overtaking Switzerland. The survey was conducted by the Sustainable Development Solutions Network and the Earth Institute at Columbia University. After Denmark, the next happiest countries are Switzerland, Iceland, Norway, Finland, Canada, Netherlands, New Zealand, Australia, and Sweden. The United States ranks 13th, Britain is 23rd, and France is 32nd on the list. The report says money does not buy happiness. Instead, health, honesty in government, social support, generosity, and freedom to make life decisions ranked high. Of course, the report lists the 10 unhappiest countries. They are Madagascar, Tanzania, Liberia, Guinea, Rwanda, Benin, Afghanistan, Togo, and Syria. Burundi holds the dubious honor of being the world's most unhappy country. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We will discuss the World Bank Conference on Land and Poverty. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Do you love sports? VOA Africa has more of what you love, an expanded Sunny Side of Sports show, more on-the-scene reports and analysis, plus what's trending in the sports world. Come to VOA Africa for the expanded half hour of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Remember, tune in starting Monday, March 21st, right here on VOA Africa.